Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite time in the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. How are we doing out there, friends? How are you feeling? I don't know about you, but I am just feeling generally a little bit anxious, more anxious than I would like. It feels like life is moving fast, the news cycle is furious, and things just seem up in the air and a little bit scary. And we, of course, our hearts go out to all of those impacted by hurricanes, all of those things. But let me tell you something. God sees, He knows, He cares. He is not pacing the throne room of heaven, wringing His hands, saying, oh no, what next? He cares very deeply. And today we're going to talk about a subject that is going to be a little tender-hearted for some of you. And so I want to make sure that I get you in a space and place to know that we're going to talk today about losing your mom. Now, I know this is really tough for some of you, and some of you think, oh no, I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't know if I want to hear about that. I'm going to encourage you to just hang on, because we are prescribing hope, and there is hope to be found. I'm so glad to have my guest today. Her name is Chelsea Ola Miller. She has written a book called Now That She's Gone, A Daughter's Reflections on Loss, Love, and a Mother's Legacy. She is a wife. She's a mom. She's an educator from Indiana. And she talks about her own journey and healing from her after her mother died. And she decided one day to take her mother's advice and share her writing with the world. And one day she gained the courage to honor her mother's wishes and to write. And in her words, it turned out to be one of the best decisions she's ever made. Now, before we get into my interview with Chelsea, I want to be really transparent with you all. And this is something that is very near and dear to me. If you're a regular listener, you know that my sweet, sweet, beautiful, amazing granny, her name was basically Granny. That's how she introduced herself to everyone. And if anyone needed a granny, she was their granny. And she really was like my mother. And I lived with her all during nursing school, was very close to her. And she went to be with Jesus just a little over a year ago. And so this is a journey that I am walking with you, that I know very well. And if you have not walked this journey, you know someone who has walked this journey. So I encourage you to listen in on how we can love others well and just walk beside them through this grieving process. So Chelsea, so thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for having the courage to share this message. And I am really grateful for the opportunity to speak with you about it.
Thank you. Like I said, I am so honored to be here, and I'm just so appreciative of anybody willing to have these conversations centered around grief, because it's such a universal experience.
It really is. And you know, for me, maybe it's me as a nurse feeling more comfortable with that, but we all need to be more comfortable talking about grief. It is a normal human emotion. And so often, you know, we feel like as outside observers, we can't fix it, or we can't make it go away, or it's just sometimes uncomfortable to watch someone else hurt so much and not feel like you can do anything about it. But there is more that we can do than we know. But Chelsea, I just want to start by just tell us about you and your beautiful family.
Thank you. I am a busy mom and wife. I have three beautiful children. My daughter is 13. My middle child is a son, and he's 11. And then our baby, which is not a baby anymore, just turned 6. So our days are mostly spent at the ball fields or some kind of, sporting event. And that's kind of where I spend a lot of my time lately.
I have definitely lived that life stage, and I have the goldfish crumbs in the minivan to tell the tale, you know, and all of the going to the ball field. It's such a sweet and precious phase. And, you know, your kids were younger. You lost your mom in 2017. And Chelsea, I'm sure that this is something that you never imagined starting off, you know, your adult life, thinking that you would experience this. And So tell us about your mom. I know you were really close to her. You had a good relationship. Just tell us about her.
Yeah, that's my favorite question always, is just being able to talk about my mom, because like you said, I mean, we had a wonderful relationship. She's the kind of mom that every child, adult, anybody wants to be blessed with. She was just beautiful and faithful and compassionate and really just, you know, composed of everything that really I look up to in a person. And so it was really devastating when she passed. She was only 57. She passed away pretty quickly in 2017 from cancer. And it really just rocked my world, you know, losing my foundation, my mother, you know, one of the most important people in my life. And so, it just really changed the outlook for my future, and then also just the priorities of what I wanted my life and my, you know, to be built around, and my children's life to be built around.
Well, how did your healing journey lead you to writing this book to honor her?
Well, I realized that grief is complicated and it makes people uncomfortable. And so I was surrounded by, you know, wonderful family and friends, but I really realized that they shied away when I would, you know, be emotional or want to talk about my mom. And so I just kind of turned inside and started writing, just to heal and to process the things that I hadn't learned about grief before and things that I hadn't, you know, known or prepared myself for. And so I wrote at first just to heal. And then through that healing process, my husband actually, you know, reminded me that my mom kind of always encouraged me to share my writing. And so one day I just listened, thinking nothing would come of it. And then women just started writing me and saying, I used your words to tell my pastor or my husband what I was feeling that I didn't have the words for, but you provided them for me. And that's exactly how I felt. And I thought, wow, this is powerful. That means that it's not just me and that we need to be talking about these difficult things.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I'm not sure, I didn't know what to expect, honestly, when I opened the cover of your book. And as I started to read, I'll share with our listeners that it's really a series of very brief vignettes. Each little vignette is like a page or two, maybe three at the most. And it just explores a different element of or emotion that you experienced or thought that you processed in the aftermath of losing your mom. And I'll tell you, Chelsea, I got goosebumps even right now, because as I was reading that, I felt like, yes, I have had this experience. There was so much that I could relate to. And I think it would be a really helpful tool for someone who is grieving the loss of their mother, just to take that grief in little bite-sized pieces and to think about just those short little elements of it and to sit with it for a minute. And, you know, Chelsea, you talked about how it can be uncomfortable for people to talk about grief and talk about loss. And I remember not too long ago, one of my very good friends lost her husband. And one day she posted something on social media and said, some of you feel awkward about bringing up his name, but I want you to say his name. When you say his name, you give me the gift of his presence. He's back, because yes, he's everywhere and nowhere. And I think, would you agree with that, Chelsea? Because I feel like that about my granny. If somebody tells me, oh, I want to tell you a story about her, a memory about her, oh, nothing makes my heart sing more. Do you feel that way too?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's really the only way that we can keep them alive beyond us and beyond our family, is if our friends and the people that knew her keep saying her name. That's really the only way that the influence can carry on. And I always tell people, you know, my friends at first, like your friend, you know, wouldn't say my mom's name. And I had to remind them that you cannot make my grief larger than it already is. And you cannot remind me of my mom and how she's gone, because I live with that every day. And so I promise you, it is so much better to keep saying their name, keep asking about how, you know, she was, keep asking about her memories, because it's a beautiful gift anytime we can still remember and honor them.
It is such a beautiful gift. I remember being in my grandparents' house after they passed away, and no one was living there. And so when my sisters and I went to go and visit the house, we discovered that it had been broken into. And we called the police, and the police came, and was very just professional, taking my report. And it looked like he wanted to say something, but he just was kind of debating back and forth. And finally, he told me, he said, "I knew your granny very well." And he shared about how he had lost his wife. And she thought he didn't have any kids at the time, and there was nobody at home baking for him. And so she said, "I really think every man needs a woman to bake him some treats from time to time." And so she would just take him some baked treats. And just sharing that little story, I'm sure he was wondering, will this cause more pain? But it didn't at all. It was so wonderful to hear about that legacy that lives on. But you talk in your book, Chelsea, about this shift, the going from side by side to side by shadow. And I really could relate to that. What does that look like?
Yeah. So, when you have a mother beside you, whether you're at college or in adulthood, your mom is always there with you, and usually you're out doing things together physically. And so that was the side by side that I talk about, that I wasn't ready to transition to that side by shadow. And what I meant by that is just that, she's like a shadow now. She's always with me. Her influence is always here. It just looks different than before. And you have to learn to kind of live with an influence in a different way than it was before, that transition that happens. And it was so important for me to do that because it helped me realize that I'm always her daughter, no matter where she is or what the circumstance is. And that while she may not be, physically here anymore, she will always be a part of me. And I had to learn to have that give me light at the end of the day, instead of remembering only the darkness of her absence.
I think that's a really good way to think about it. And, people may be listening to you, Chelsea, and even listening to me talking about my granny, and they're thinking, "Oh, but my relationship with my mom is not like that. It is really hard and really complicated." And maybe your mom is still living here on earth, or maybe she has passed away and your relationship was complicated and you didn't get that closure. And Chelsea, you're very sensitive to that in this book too. And there are contributions at the end of each section called "When It's Complicated" that are inspired by the journeys of other people you have talked to who have had difficult relationships with their mothers. What did you learn from hearing those stories, and what encouragement do you feel like you can offer for those who are experiencing that?
Yeah, I love that you asked this because, like I said, I knew I had a wonderful relationship with my mother, but even some of my closest friends have complex relationships with their mother. And I truly wanted this book to be for anybody, no matter what your relationship looked like. And I learned through talking with people that followed my page, that one, we cannot really compare grief, and we shouldn't compare it. It is not something that can be measured or one that has worth other than, above another one. And so in talking with these women that have these complex relationships, I wanted to make sure that the book had a specific place for them too, to honor whatever that looked like. And, absence is absence, whether you had a wonderful relationship or one that was a little bit less than, desirable. And so I wanted to make sure that all grief was honored. And I loved working. I wrote those essays as well, but I loved listening to the women tell their stories because it helped them know that their grief deserved a word and an essay as well. And also it just taught me also to be grateful for what I had that they really were longing for in life and in their mother's death.
I really appreciate that you did that because it is a secret pain, really, that a lot of women carry around, and frankly, a lot of men too, who have really strained relationships with their mothers. There's a lot of guilt that comes with that. And when you're grieving that, no matter what situation you're grieving, grief is not linear. It is not a journey where you start and then you just generally and gradually progress. It is a messy, back and forth, up and down, looping sort of journey that can be unpredictable at times. And I'm really glad that you addressed that, Chelsea, because sometimes you may experience a life moment that will trigger a new thought or a new way to process that. But there is hope. When we come back, we'll talk about some of these experiences that Chelsea shares in her book about losing her mom, but where she found hope in her faith. We'll be right back. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Oh, sing hallelujah, our hope springs eternal. Oh, sing hallelujah, now and ever we confess, Christ our hope and life and death. Welcome back, friends. That song is Christ our hope in life and death by the Worship Initiative. And that is exactly what we are talking about today. Listen, I hope I can make it through this whole show without shedding tears, but I'm failing already right now. This is such a something that I hold so close to my heart. But let me tell you, I know that my beautiful, sweet grandmother is in a better place. I know that she is in the presence of the Lord, and Christ can give us hope in life and death. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking to those of you who have lost your mom. If that's not you, you know someone who has, and we're so grateful for Chelsea Ola Miller, who has written a book about her experience in her mom's death and finding hope and healing in that. It's called Now That She's Gone, A Daughter's Reflections on Loss, Love, and a Mother's Legacy. And Chelsea, in these little vignettes, I just wanted to pick out some of them that I related to, and I'm sure so many other people do, and just have some honest conversation about grief. And one of these is entitled Grief's Jealousy, and I want to read to my listeners the first part of it. I see you with your mother, and I'm jealous. I don't want to be, but I am. Pieces of my heart are so incredibly happy for you, but other pieces ache with envy. My mother is gone. She's dead, buried at a cemetery, and gone from my future. It sounds harsh, because it is. I see you taking pictures and enjoying life together. I'm not proud to admit it, but I'm jealous of your ability to make new memories with your mother. I wish I could do the same. Chelsea, talk about this jealousy that you feel, because I know it.
Yeah. It really surprised me. I'll be honest. It makes me choke up just hearing somebody else read my delicate words. But, you know, jealousy comes with such shame. I think it's one of those emotions that you feel and then you immediately feel embarrassed or shameful about feeling that emotion. And so when I experienced my first Mother's Day and the first moments where I saw other women with their moms, jealousy really hit me. And then it hit me hard because I thought, oh no, I'm not supposed to feel like this. And so I really realized that it's common, you know, and until writing about it, I didn't realize how common it was. And it's not because I'm jealous in a way that I want something that, and I want them not to have it. I want them to keep it forever too. I just want it again as well. And so, yeah, it was one of those emotions that I feel like really surprised me about grief and no one kind of talked about. And so I felt it was really important to, you know, have a place for it inside the book.
You know, I've experienced that too. I think that's one of the reasons why your words jumped off of the page to me so much. And I've shared with my listeners about losing my relationship with my mother. And I think that that's another element of grief here. It may not be losing someone in death. It may be losing someone in the death of a relationship. And that grief is very real and very raw as well. And I remember being shopping for my teenage daughters at the time for Christmas. And there was an older teenage girl, maybe college age, who was helping me out to pick some things. And she had her phone on the register and I was paying for my purchase. And she had her phone face up and it started ringing and it said, "Mom." And she got really embarrassed. Aww. And flipped it over really quick and was just like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. That's so embarrassing." And I said, "What is your relationship like with your mom?" And she said, "Oh, we're so close. We're so best friends." Chelsea, I started bawling right there in the middle of the store. And aww. I was like, pick up the phone, call her back, talk to her, because I wish that I had that. You know, that's something that I wish that I had. And to have it, it's such a beautiful thing. And, you know, one of the things that you said in that really resonates with me too, because one of your, I'm calling them vignettes. I don't know what you call them, but that's what I'm calling them. It's called Bouncing Back. And it's kind of like when you experience grief, you think people just expect, like, "Oh, you're getting better. You're better now." But it's not like that. It's those little triggers that you don't even anticipate coming sometimes that send you spiraling backwards. And then you think, "Have I made any progress? Am I healing? What is that like?"
Yes. Yes. And I love that you're calling them vignettes. I think that's beautiful. I, like you said earlier, you know, grief is so complicated and messy and it's not linear. And so that's why I wanted this book to be Take What You Need When You Need It. And that's why they're so short, because oftentimes in grief, it's hard enough to know what you want to do next or know what needs to happen next. And so I wanted them to be very short, very accessible for whatever you need. And then just like you said, you know, I had a lady say to me, "Oh, you've bounced back." And I thought, I don't know what that looks like. I think I'm constantly bouncing. I think, you know, in grief, we're constantly bouncing towards hope in the future. And then also we go backwards to, you know, aching for what we've lost and are missing. And I think it's that constant bouncing of, you know, back and forth from hope to joy to pain to heartbreak. And sadly, that's what grief is. You know, it transforms, it gets better with time, but it doesn't go away with time. I think our perspective changes. And so, yeah, it's just that constant bouncing between, you know, what you need to do and how you need to move forward, not on, and also honor everything that's behind you, because that's still so powerful and an important part of your story.
I think one of the hardest things about that grief journey and bouncing back and falling down and all of those, you know, messy looping up and down, back and forth things, is that that person you're grieving is not there to experience it with you. I mean, I feel like there's so many times I think, "Oh, I want to talk to her." And, you know, I know I can talk to her in some ways, but she's not there. And one of your vignettes really talks about a powerful sentence that is in pretty much any obituary that you would read, but I had never thought about this before. But this sentence really impacted you and shifted your perspective. And the sentence is, "She leaves behind a daughter." Tell us why caught your attention. Grips my heart, like even right now.
Yeah, it was about a year or so after my mother had passed away. And I was reading the paper and an obituary popped out of a woman who had lost her mother. And it had the words, "She leaves behind a daughter." And it just hit me really hard. And it does feel like that, like you've been left behind, you know, like you're standing somewhere that seems completely foreign to you. And then just in thinking about that sentence, you know, I started to think about what I was doing with my life and how things were going on. And I started to realize that death can multiply, and not in a way where people are physically gone as well, but just, you know, there's a difference between living and surviving. And for a long time after my mother's death, I was surviving, but I was not living. And I realized that if you really think about it, then that means their death has multiplied, because it's stealing pieces of our life too, which they wouldn't want. I know my mother would not want that for me. And so I had to just shift my thinking behind, you know, from "she leaves behind a daughter" to, yes, I'm here still, and so now I need to do something with it. I need to still walk with purpose and live with purpose.
And there's other people around you who are picking up the pieces. You know, you had your children, your husband, your friends, you know, people who are walking through and trying to do their best to comfort you in this grief journey. And another vignette is loving a woman who lost a mother. What advice and encouragement can you give to those who are sitting on the outside, who want so badly to make it better, who hate that you're hurting, but don't really know what to do? How would you equip and encourage them?
I think the first thing is just learning that, you know, so much of love, especially the romantic kind, you want someone who takes your breath away. And I think that as you get older, you realize that you actually need somebody to remind you to breathe. Because while that seems like such a, you know, simple task, when you are experiencing profound trauma or loss, you can forget that simple thing and how important it is. And so just really surrounding yourself with people who are worthy of your grief, because not everybody, I've learned, is worthy of witnessing your most delicate and vulnerable moments, and surrounding yourself with those people. And I think for me, it was learning to surround myself with, you know, a husband and friends that were willing to sit with me in my darkness and my grief as much as they are my joy and my light and my fun moments. And it's not always easy. And sometimes those people end up being people you didn't expect, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely understand that. There's just so many divine encounters where I think the Lord just lifts our eyes to see each other. You see someone with a similar experience or someone you didn't know had a similar experience, and you can share that. And I think about the verse in the Bible that says, carry one another's burdens, and in so doing, fulfill the law of Christ. And it doesn't say to fix them, to, you know, take them away. It just says carry them, just walk with them and carry them. And that can be really hard to do, especially around the holidays. And you've written about this, about grief and the holidays, because those are such special family times. And we do see a lot of families who are together. We have traditions where there's just such a big, you know, absence, and that can be really hard. What wisdom would you share for families who are approaching this season, so they can, you know, just approach this season tenderly, with grace and with gentleness?
Yes, I think that the first thing, which was a lesson I had to learn, is just, you know, figure out what traditions still work for you, because sometimes they may not. And the responsibility of trying to keep up with everything that your mother did or somebody in your family that's gone, you know, sometimes it's easier to just decide that maybe that tradition isn't as fitting for you. And also, so many times around the holidays, you see people talking about an empty chair or an empty space. And with my children and I, we kind of thought about that different. And now we say that chair is not empty. It's simply filled in a capacity that we cannot see nor understand. And that helps us to remember that as long as we are here and we are talking about her and we're saying her name, that she is still part of the, you know, magical elements of the holidays. And especially, you know, just doing whatever you can to honor both the grief and the legacy that you've been lifted, and know that it's okay to pause for a while, even while the world is celebrating and there's sparkly lights everywhere. It's okay to pause and just take a moment for yourself.
You just said something really important that I don't want to skip over. You said that you talked to your children about this. You know, your children now even are 13, 11, and 6, and so still pretty young. How do you talk to your children? Because sometimes people who are experiencing grief, you know, it's hard because you don't want to see them. You don't want them to see you being a mess all the time, like that you're just devastated in the brokenness of your heart. But you want to be authentic and share that. What was your experience like?
Well, at first I did, you know, kind of what you're explaining. As a mom, you know, we want to protect just like my mother did. And so I kind of hid my grief for a long time. And then I had somebody in my life say, you know, if you don't want your children to be shocked in the way that you were when your mother is gone, you have to start being authentic with them. It's okay to cry. It's okay to walk down the aisle of the bakery section that my mom would always, you know, love and make all of her recipes and get a little emotional about. So as long as you talk to them and tell them what you're experiencing, and of course there are things that as a parent, we, you know, there's a limit to what we share, but really just knowing that it's okay to be vulnerable with them, because chances are they're feeling it too. And that was some of the best advice I got, because then I did stop hiding and started just saying, oh, I'm a little emotional because I'm making Meme's recipe, and it just makes me think about her and miss her. And then the other element was, we just told them, you can mention her whenever, it will not upset us. You know, say her name, tell her stories, ask about her. And also, it's okay to name your emotion. I'm sad today, or I'm missing her, or I'm jealous of the grandparents that are there at Grandparents' Day. And so really just including them in the emotion so that they know that what they're experiencing is okay too.
That is so important, because our kids, their whole job in creating their own psychological safety is to read our emotions, to read our thoughts, to know what we're thinking and how we're feeling. And the truth is, they know us a lot better than we know ourselves. And so modeling those emotions, just saying, yeah, I'm feeling sad today, I'm struggling with this, here's the hope that I'm clinging to, here's what I'm doing to take care of myself today, here's what makes me feel better, you know, here's how I'm praying today, here's the music I'm listening to, here's, you know, just whatever that is. I mean, I think about one time, you know, not too long after my granny had died, my girls who were in college were with me, and they were just, what do you need to do? And I said, I just need to go stand on her porch. I just need to stand there. So they gave me some space, and they just let me stand there, and I was able to share with them some good memories. And I did. I cried, and they knew it, and they saw it, and they just, you know, were comforting and just there with me. And it was a really beautiful thing, and I'm really glad. I had been tempted to go by myself because I thought, oh, you know, I don't want to drag them into this. But the joy of sharing the legacy that she leaves is just beautiful. And the holiday, you specifically talk about Christmas, and I know that is one of the hardest. Chelsea, what advice do you have for those who are facing maybe their first Christmas without their mom or whoever it is that they love that they've lost?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just find whatever glimmer of hope is still there and cling to that. And then also just, you know, really, faith is so important and such an element to my healing and my, you know, my own outlook for what the future holds. And so just really, you know, I think honor whatever it is that you need and just be willing to never stay stagnant. You know, if the holidays are just so hard, and so sometimes they're so overwhelming that we just stay in one place. And so I would just encourage people to just step, whatever that looks like, you know, whether one day that's getting out of bed or one day that's going to an event at your church or with your friends, just promise yourself that wherever you are today, tomorrow you'll be someplace different. And wherever that is, that's a step forward.
I think that is really good advice. Just being kind to yourself and recognizing that you're human and you have human emotions. Well, when we come back, Chelsea, I really want to dive into that element of your faith and how it informed you and strengthened you and encouraged you. And we'll talk about my favorite vignette that you wrote in here, my absolute favorite one, the one that gives me hope. And we'll talk about that when we come back on the other side of this break. We're talking to Chelsea Ola Miller, author of Now That She's Gone, A Daughter's Reflections on Loss, Love, and a Mother's Legacy. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Fear the enemy. said he loves me. He said that he's with me even though I walk through the valley of shadow and death, and still I know.
Welcome back. That song is Good Plans by Red Rocks Worship. And you may be thinking, how can we talk about God having good plans when we're talking about grief and losing our loved ones in death? We're talking today to the author of Now That She's Gone, A Daughter's Reflections on Loss, Love, and a Mother's Legacy. We're talking to Chelsea Olemiller about losing her mom to cancer in 2017. Listen, God does have good plans, and He created a world in which we can accept Christ as our Savior, and then we can live forever with those people we love. And Chelsea, I just want to get into this element of your faith and how it has guided you in your grief journey, because you share some really real questions that are asked. And as I've been sharing with my listeners, I've just called these little vignettes that you've written just one or two page reflections. And one of those that you ask is, for you, God, wouldn't it be so easy? Tell us about that question you asked the Lord.
Yeah, well, so when my mom passed, you know, she was really the foundation of my faith. She is, you know, we were raised in the church. And so when she passed, I'll be really honest, I thought my faith went with her. And for a while, I thought my faith was non-existent. And luckily, through the beauty of just faith in God and, you know, the light of all of His promises, I realized it was simply being challenged, that it was still there. And so really, for you, God, wouldn't it be so easy, was a prayer. It was really a call to Him of just, when my mom was struggling and at her absolute lowest point physically, where, you know, the disease was kind of ravaging her body, I just wrote this, you know, raw prayer to Him, just, you know, for you, God, wouldn't it be so easy to heal her, to let her be a miracle, to let, you know, all of your promises and miracles happen on her right now, you know? And it was really just this vulnerable, really vulnerable prayer to Him of, I know it's easy for you, so can you please just help her?
And then, you know, you follow it up. It is. It's such a, I just get chills in reading it, because one of the things you said was, I want her to be touched by heaven, not taken by heaven. For you, God, wouldn't it be so easy? But it's followed up immediately with a message called The Same God. Tell us about that.
Mm. Yeah. So I think that, you know, we sometimes, when we are in our harshest moments, we start seeing things, you know, that sometimes we blame God for, like the miracle we didn't get, the prayer that didn't get answered. And so I started realizing that for everything, that every time I would try to be angry with Him or, you know, have a frustration, I realized that, oh, you know, the God who didn't necessarily answer my prayers for my mother's healing has answered prayers for my own healing, you know, and that's powerful. And that's the same God, the God that granted me, you know, three beautiful blessings and allowed me to be a mother, is also, you know, the same God that knows cancer and destruction and all of these things. And so I really had to sit with my faith and, you know, learn from it and what those lessons taught me about a God who could do all the beautiful things and also have a world that has ache and heartbreak in it.
Well, and another one of your vignettes that really just hit me square between the eyes was, why doesn't God heal everyone? And I remember asking the Lord to give my grandmother more time. You know, I just wanted more time with her, that the condition that she had, you know, He could heal it and she could live a little longer. And you asked this question very honestly. And again, Chelsea, I just want to read what you said. You said that as you were praying and asking God this, it was almost like you could hear your mom say this. Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm going to try my best, but our listeners need to hear this. My beautiful girl, God does heal everyone. I am healed. We all are. It's just that sometimes we are healed in a way that earth cannot comprehend or witness. We are healed after the final goodbye, which means we are healed after the ability for you to witness and benefit from that gift. My sweet child, I am healed. We all are. I wish you could see it. I wish you could feel it. I hate that you are burdened with the pain that I cannot take, while all of us here in heaven feel only joy and gratitude. And I thought about that and thought, yes, that's a really important perspective shift, because so often after loss, we think about our loss and we don't think about their gain. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. And honestly, I started writing that piece, you know, in a moment of kind of the anger that grief can bring, and was just asking, like, why don't you heal everyone, God? Like, what is happening? And as I was in prayer for all of the pain that I was carrying, it was honestly like my perspective shifted. Like, my mom was trying to say something, and I just started immediately writing that from her perspective. And it gave me so much hope and so much joy to think about, I have been looking at this differently. I have been looking at her death from my seat and not from the glory of hers. And you cannot do that right away. That's not a transition that happens quickly for most people. But once that transition happened for me, it was the most beautiful shift in perspective that I've ever experienced in my life.
And that leads to my very favorite vignette in this whole book. If you get this book, it's on page 160. And I know that you wrote this for your mom, Chelsea, but I just feel like it is so reflective of just the human experience of loss and grief. And it was so beautiful. And again, I just want to share a little bit with our listeners here to give them a taste of what your message is like. You said, of all the places that she could be, she ended up exactly where she always hoped she would, heaven. And even though I was taught that is the best outcome, the ultimate goal, it doesn't make her absence easier or less painful. It does, however, make it a little more hopeful and inspiring. For so long, her death was all I could see. I couldn't visualize or appreciate her soul's new and glorious journey. There's nothing glorious about grief, and in the wake of her death, I could only see the darkness, the empty spaces, the seeming absence of love. My story and my truth were the only realities on my mind. And then you go on to say her final breaths and last moments on this earth were endings only for those of us who remained, but they weren't her ending. Her unwavering faith set her up for this moment, which is why she wasn't scared or fearful, even though the rest of us were. Her belief in where she was going wasn't out of desperation, but the powerful trust she had learned and in turn taught to others. And then you go on at the end and say, but one day I realized that of all the places she could be, she ended up exactly where she always hoped she would, heaven. She won, she overcame, and she now experiences God's promise of eternal life. And Chelsea, I remember my sister talking to my grandmother in her final hours, and she asked her how she was feeling, and she said, I'm anxious. And she said, I'm anxious to get where I'm going. I'm ready to go. And we thought, oh, yeah, She's anxious, she's scared. No, she was just anxious to see the face of Jesus. And so what is it like now that you imagine your mom in heaven and that you know you will see her one day again?
It makes me so grateful to have faith. And it makes me so grateful to have a mom that taught me faith, because without it, I do not know where I would be. And I do not think that I would be the woman that I am today without all of those things that my mom taught me. And, you know, when that shift happened of learning that, you know, if she could be anywhere, I want her to be where she always wanted to go, which is heaven, and what she fiercely believed in. And so, you know, I think at first we're very selfish. We want people to stay here with us forever. I wanted my mom for much longer. But at the end of the day, if she can be free of cancer and free of a debilitating disease and instead also be free in heaven and experience that glory, I don't want to keep her here. I don't want her anywhere else but there. And so I still want her here. I'm always going to miss her. I'm always going to wish things were a little bit different. But that's a powerful truth to hold.
And so, one of your vignettes, how do you find joy in the pain? It still hurts. You still want her here. You wish things were different. There are times, Chelsea, for me that, you know, a moment will come up or a memory will cross my mind and it literally stops me from breathing. And I just have to wait a minute, you know, for that to pass. How do you find joy in the pain?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. And I love it because, you know, so often we, especially in church, we hear a lot of times where people will say there's joy in everything. And really, I feel like grief is joyless. And, you know, it's not always easy to see joy and light and hope and love when you're in the midst of heartbreak. And I had to, you know, find the joy. And so I always urge people, you know, if you feel like there is no joy, you just have to look a little bit harder. And so the joy for me is just knowing that, one, I have a legacy that is so beautiful from my mom that I hope I carry on to my children. The joy is that my mom is no longer in pain. You know, there's just so much joy. And while that's also attached to heartbreak, I think you can be both forever. You can be, you know, missing someone and hopeful forever. You can be holding a little bit of heartbreak and also, you know, bliss and blessings as well. And so I think it's just having that and always and carrying forward.
One of the other vignettes that you wrote that just really, really grabbed me was called I Choose You. And in all of that, you said, I choose you. And I read it, honestly, Chelsea, thinking that you were going to talk about choosing your mother. But the first sentence of this says, if I had to lose my mother to someone, it could only be you, Lord. The one she so fiercely believed would take her pain and provide her with a limitless future. The one who promised heaven and love and light like we've never known. I choose you, Lord. If I have to lose my mother to someone, it could only be you. She trusted you. She loved you. She made you the priority above every person and piece of her life. She believed you and your promises. She chose you. And if she chose you, then I do too. Tell us about that, where that came from. My goodness, that is such a perspective shift for me. And I am sitting here. I did not make it without tears, Chelsea, but it's so beautiful.
Well, thank you. You know, this chapter is really my favorite, is just dealing with, you know, the faith element of grief, because like I said, it is the one that provides so much hope. And really this section just talks about that shift in perspective. And one day in the midst of, you know, on the floor kind of crying and sorrow, I just begged to have a perspective shift and I begged for hope. And I thought, you know, if my mom would always choose my sister and I, she would always choose family. And I thought, you know, if there's one person out there that she would want to be with other than us, it would only be the Lord. And so why am I not grateful that she's walking beside and, you know, up with somebody that she always fiercely believed in? And I think that for a long time, you know, our mothers want to protect us and they always take care of us. And it was really when my prayer shifted that I wanted my mom to be taken care of and have eternal life like she always hoped she would. And so it was, I feel like that's my last gift to my mom, is just being proud of her where she is and still knowing that she can love me from there.
And you are her living legacy, Chelsea. You are her legacy. Mm-hmm. You hold every piece of her that remains. How do you live that out?
Honestly, through grace and compassion, and all, I just try to be all of the things that she was, that she can no longer be, and not showing up for people because I feel like I need to, but because I'm called to, just like she did, and really just trying to make the world as beautiful as it felt when she was here.
That is absolutely beautiful. Well, the book, again, is called Now That She's Gone, A Daughter's Reflections on Lost Love and a Mother's Legacy. And if you have lost your mother, whether in death or relationship, I think this could be a really helpful way for you to process your grief, just in brief little vignettes, as I've called them. And Chelsea, thank you so much for sharing this. Where can our listeners find you and learn more and follow through with you on your grief journey?
Your listeners can find me on social media at Hope and Harsh Realities. And then you can also find me on my website, which is hopeandharshrealities.com. And then the book is wherever books are sold.
Well, that is just fantastic news. Thank you so much for being so brave and vulnerable to share with us. And one of the other vignettes you wrote, Chelsea, was let me know if you need anything. And nobody grieving ever says that. So just show up. Just show up and just care. Just be there. Just sit with people as they grieve. And I think that's a really important thing to say. Well, thank you so much for joining us. May the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. And just know that if this is you, I'm walking this road with you. And I believe that there is hope. I believe there is healing. And I believe I'll see you right here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.